At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, it's so nice to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm all right. Doc's a day, so hopefully Indy won't be too much of a distraction. Yeah, fingers crossed she'll be fine. So it's always nice to have a dog nearby.
Yeah, I genuinely think that everyone should have. I am a cat fan as well, I have to say, but pets make the world of difference, I think, to your lives.
I agree with that. And I do love cats as well, just all animals. But I like the dogs a bit cuddlier, so a bit of puppy therapy. Every week is necessary for me.
I love that. Did you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, so my name is Bria Kennedy. I am the founder of a company called Prepare, which in a nutshell is a digital safeguarding tool intended for aesthetic clinics and practitioners and cosmetic surgeons, anyone who carries out aesthetic treatments to help them safeguard their patients from psychological harm, just because that is so common in the industry. It just attracts people with underlying psychological issues like body dysmorphic disorder, eating disorders, and a bunch of other issues related to appearance.
I think you've nicely alluded to it a little bit as to what was it that inspired you to start Prepare?
Yeah, so Prepare is based on my personal experience with body dysmorphia and eating disorders and cosmetic surgery to, I guess, summarize my story. I have always had body image issues, especially around like weight and shape. And I grew up doing ballet, so obviously that kind of messes you up for life. And I always felt that my body was too curvy, which, you know, it never actually was, but that's just the huge complex I had about it. And so after really struggling to accept my shape and my body and using binders for like years and years and years, I decided to get a surgery. And I basically wanted to get a breast reduction on a B cup. When I came to the surgeon's clinic, you know, he was like, reduction on what? Like, that there really isn't like tissue that we can reduce. So I didn't know at the time what body dysmorphia really was. I was like vaguely aware of it, but I didn't realize that I could be affected by it. And I didn't realize how it would play out when it comes to cosmetic procedures. So anyway, so I just basically convinced the surgeon to go ahead and do something. So I've undergone one surgery, and at first I was really happy with it. And within a few days to a couple of weeks, I was like, I literally cannot see the difference. What even did they do? And I went back to the surgeon and basically complained. And it didn't take too much convincing, but I did basically get them to do the surgery again for the second time within about 4 months. So within the space of 4 months, I've undergone two very invasive surgeries that weren't necessary to begin with. And throughout that time, no one's mentioned BDD to me. No one's really asked me questions about, I mean, I guess the surgeon would have asked, you know, why do you want this? And I would have been just like to, you know, feel better and look better. And that was enough. There wasn't any more probing or questioning of my motivations and expectations. So again, looking back at it in hindsight, I see I was like the textbook BDD patient that thought that this surgery would transform my life and I would be suddenly happy and that, you know, any depression that I felt would go away, because the preoccupation was so strong. It genuinely was something that I would think about every minute of every day, and my days would kind of revolve around it, of how I planned my outfits and how I body was like one of the things, but then, as is often the case with body dysmorphia, there were other aspects of my body that I sort of had some preoccupation with. But yeah, because it had such a big impact on my life and it was kind of omnipresent, I thought the surgery would basically solve that and make it go away. And surprise, surprise, it didn't. So after having the second surgery and still not being able to see the difference, like I physically couldn't really see it. Sometime later, I finally realized that, someone brought up body dysmorphia to me. So quite randomly, I found out about what it was and read some other people's stories and understood how it actually affects people. And that's when I started learning more about it and realizing, oh, actually, I could be one of those cases. And it was almost like an instant sense of relief because suddenly the whole experience was kind of validated in a way. So it didn't feel like there was something wrong with me and just me. It was like, oh, this is a diagnosable issue that you can actually get treatment for. And that treatment is not cosmetic surgery. So in that way, it was a relief. Looking back at it, it's infuriating and also really sad that it would have taken very little for the surgeon or the clinic staff to say something or just mention something that would have made me perhaps reconsider. Not to say that that would have stopped me from going ahead with the first surgery, but it probably would have stopped me from going ahead with the second surgery. And it definitely would have alleviated the massive psychological distress that came with that experience. And so that was the story that some years later inspired me to find Prepared. Yeah, long story. That's it in a nutshell.
I really appreciate you sharing your story. I think that there will be a lot of people that will resonate, but because body dysmorphia isn't widely spoken about, widely known about, I think it's something that maybe a lot of people live with that they don't even realise. And I don't know whether this was your experience, but I found, until someone said to me, have you heard of body dysmorphia? I think that's possibly what's impacting you. How the hell could you possibly know that you have it? Because, you know, you've said there that you went and you had the surgery and you still couldn't see any different. And you went back to them and you're like, no, I categorically can't see any different. I want to make a complaint. That shows just how realistic the distortions that you have about your body are. So until someone sits you down and says, by the way, I don't think, can you know that you have body dysmorphia without...
Oh, that's just the thing. You can't address an issue or fight a problem when you don't know what it is. And I think the awareness of body dysmorphia still isn't quite there. I mean, it definitely wasn't some 5 or so years ago when I've undergone my surgery. And as you say, it's so interesting because often people mistake body dysmorphia for vanity, or they just think, you know, you're just, oh, that's what I was raised to believe, that, you know, if you're preoccupied with your appearance, you're just vain. And it's not seen as a psychological issue. And obviously there are distinctions between just vanity and body dysmorphia in a similar way as with eating disorders, right? It's not just being on a diet, or it's not just choosing to be skinnier. You actually have a psychological issue that is driving you to be preoccupied. I didn't just manage to convince myself that my behavior and responses to this experience were normal behavior. I also managed to convince absolutely everyone around me that it was fine. And that's kind of what has inspired the development of as like a well-being check-in as opposed to screening or assessment. Because even if the surgeon has given me the assessment, I would have just passed it, you know, without even really fully being aware of what BDD was and that it may impact my ability to get this surgery. You can sense what you have to say to be able to go ahead. And again, because I grew up with this experience of, you know, if you express a concern around your appearance, despite being objectively good looking, people sort of almost ridicule you, or you're seen as fishing for compliments. No one understands the amount of distress it actually causes. They can't imagine. And so you learn to quite intuitively hide it, and you start being able to hide it really well. And so that masking behavior is what, you know, by the time I was in my early 20s, was an expert in, because I've felt this way ever since I could remember. And so that's kind of why I don't believe in screening methods, because I think if you give people a test, they'll just find a way to pass it.
Yeah. I think we live in a society where, you know, it's so common for people to say, like, I don't like this about myself, or I'm uncomfortable with this, or, you know, I want to change this. So if I've ever said any comment about my body or my face or my hair, it would be like, oh, Hannah, you're beautiful. Don't worry about it. Like, don't stress. And because I think it's so normal for people to have concerns, if you don't explain the kind of severity of how overwhelming those thoughts are and how much they're taking over your life, people do kind of just disregard them. And I imagine that, you know, that can then lead somebody to think, well, this is just normal, what I'm experiencing. It's not body dysmorphia if you're not explaining kind of the severity. But one thing that I wanted to ask you there, and because I know that you're very much not against cosmetic surgery. It's just, as you said, you very much want to make sure that people have the right information and that they're doing the right choices. Within your tool that you have, when would you say is okay for somebody to have a cosmetic surgery? And when is it not okay? Because from where I'm sitting, if somebody has an insecurity about something in their body, if they get that changed, is it not just going to pass to a different insecurity?
Exactly. No, and that's a really good question. And as you said, and I do like to stress this, I am in absolutely no way, shape or form against cosmetic procedures. I think there's been a lot of research showing that they can do wonderful things for people's self-confidence, and they genuinely can improve people's quality of life. But what's most important is that people go into them with healthy motivations and realistic expectations. Most of the research out there would suggest that BV is a contradiction to cosmetic surgery. Now, I don't necessarily strictly agree with that, but what it comes down to is there's quite a thin line between safeguarding and infringing on the patient's autonomy. And so all practitioners really can do is ensure patients have all the information and that they've thought about it. And so, as you say, I think with BDD specifically, it is quite common for patients to either be initially happy with the result of their procedure and then they sort of stop being able to see the difference and then again goes back to the negative feelings about appearance. Or there were cases where that specific concern that's been addressed with cosmetic procedure has actually improved. And as you say, it has just shifted to another part of the body. A new concern came up. And so it is kind of a relentless cycle of cosmetic procedures and dissatisfaction. And so if you were to ask, when is it okay for people to have procedures, you know, that's everyone's choice. Because again, even if someone wants to look a certain way, even if it doesn't conform to the quote unquote traditional beauty standards, who's to say that they shouldn't? So again, there is no single measure to say, you know, this is normal, this is healthy, and this isn't. It really is such an individual decision that everyone has to make for themselves. And again, my whole ethos and the idea behind Prepare is that people just have to pause, ask themselves, you know, why do you want this? What made you want to go ahead and get this procedure done now? What are you hoping to achieve with it? And by that, that doesn't mean, oh, you want to feel better, you want to look your best. It means, what are you hoping for in terms of impact? Because there are realistic expectations and there are unrealistic expectations, right? The telltale sign of BDD in cosmetic patients is these unrealistic expectations where they hope that any kind of change in their appearance or what they'd consider enhancement will, for example, help them find a partner or get a job promotion or make any kind of negative or depressive thoughts go away. So you hope for quite a significant impact. And obviously that's not going to happen. The thing with BDD is it doesn't matter what you change physically on your body, difference, right? If you have distorted perception of your body, then it doesn't matter what you do to it, the perception will still be distorted. So that is why in probably about 98% of cases, BDD patients do not benefit from cosmetic procedures.
So you said there about kind of the unrealistic expectations that people with body dysmorphia, you know, that can be a telltale sign. In my head, they would like the reasons why you would have cosmetic surgery. So maybe that is a telltale sign. But in that sense, what would be a more realistic expectation from cosmetic surgery that maybe would be a healthier way of seeing it rather than this is going to change my life? Because I know personally, when I've ever thought about going down the route of cosmetic surgery or changing the things I'm insecure about, it's like, well, this is going to change my life because it's going to change the way that I perceive my body and how I feel about my body, which for me is the biggest kind of intense thought in my head.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not about pathologizing everyone's motivation to undergo surgery, because as I said, there are some healthy motivations. I think there are a lot of people who see cosmetic procedures for, you know, what they are. And now we can make a distinction between the surgical procedures that are obviously much more invasive and are expected to have a bigger impact on your life, and then the minimally invasive procedures like lip fillers, Botox, you know, all of that. And these are small changes that still should be medical treatments, so it's not to trivialize them, but a lot of people see them as a part of their self-care routine, if you will. Like, it's just like a little thing that will, you know, make you feel refreshed. And in a similar way, you know, skincare and other, whatever, you know, facials, things like that, they're just like a little self-care thing that you do as a part of, you know, and living a whatever holistic having a holistic approach to your overall well-being. But it's not like the thing that will fix everything, even though about 20% of people who look to undergo cosmetic procedures suffer from BDD. It's actually around 40 to 50% that suffer from some sort of other mental health issue, like depression, like anxiety. And I think that kind of plays into the reasons why BDD actually often develops, but I'm sure people can in a way relate. When something's going on in your life that you're not able to control, you look for things to control elsewhere, right? And appearance, I think, is one of those things that is relatively easy to control, as opposed to, you know, a relationship or some family issues or job problems. And so that's when cosmetic procedures become really harmful, when they are seen as that kind of coping mechanism where people are very unhappy elsewhere in their life and they sort of see the cosmetic procedures as something to make themselves feel better. And then they kind of become reliant on it, right? That's what can lead to the cycle of dissatisfaction, because you think, ooh, this helped, and then as most things, cosmetic surgery can become an addiction. There's something called perception drift, where people basically stop being able to see the gradual changes in their appearance and they sort of need a complete reset of the baseline. And again, I don't want to say that anyone who undergoes cosmetic procedures has some sort of underlying psychological issue, but it's just so important to think about what your motivations are. What are you hoping to achieve? And is that realistic?
It's interesting because as you were talking, I was trying to think in my head of like an example that would be kind of acceptable in terms of changing your appearance. And I started thinking about things like, you know, going to the gym. That is something that people would do to change their appearance. It's obviously a slower process than going to get cosmetic surgery. Then I was like, but then you can get addicted to exercise. And if you're very reliant on the gym, then that's not healthy. So then I was like, okay, well, maybe getting your hair cut. But then I know that also people that have body dysmorphia, sometimes they struggle with their hair. So then they become hyper-conscious about the way that their hair looks or getting that done. And so in my head, I was like, basically what I've decided is that these things can all be okay. It's when they're taken to excess that they're not okay. And it kind of got me thinking about things like lip fillers and Botox and things like that, because I have friends that have had lip fillers or they've had, you know, baby Botox on their foreheads and stuff like that. And I think for me, I'm still like, but is that okay? Because realistically, if you're having those procedures and then you don't feel like you can stop having those procedures because it's made you look a certain way, I don't know where I sit in terms of like, is that okay to have that reliance on those behaviors? Because how's that different to, let's say, having the reliance on the gym to maintain a particular physique because of the way that that perceives you as a person?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you said before about everything can be okay in moderation, but when it becomes excessive, that's when it becomes an issue. You can get addicted to literally anything, right? You can develop a psychological reliance on anything, whether it's exercise or cosmetic procedures or eating healthy. When it becomes, I suppose you could say, almost an obsession, when it starts impacting your life, that's when it becomes an issue. So again, I personally, so even though I've had this experience with body dysmorphia, and I'm completely not against cosmetic procedures. Like every once in a while, I would get, like a tiniest bit of filler or like a bit of Botox. So it's not something you do weekly or even monthly. It's just something that you do a couple of times a year. And I think there's nothing necessarily wrong with it. Again, as long as you understand how it slots into your life, you understand that it's not the center of your life. It's just like a little thing, just as people would go to the gym, and it doesn't necessarily have to be unhealthy. If you do it in moderation, and if you don't rely on it for your state of mind, I think it can be a perfectly healthy thing to do. I would say sets the aesthetic medicine industry apart from things like, gym, like obviously gyms and haircuts, because those aren't as invasive. Like even with the minimally invasive procedures, you're still sticking a needle into someone's face. There's still so many things that can go wrong. And because the industry is so regulated, and even with new regulation coming in, it's still incredibly poorly regulated, and anyone can inject. And so the physical safety almost takes the front seat, the psychological safety takes the back seat. And I think we're probably very far off getting regulation in place to address that. But because there are those physical risks, people have died from things like Brazilian butt lifts and other notoriously risky injectables procedures. That is obviously something to consider, right? Is it worth the risk? Because if you dye your hair, if you cut your hair, that's probably not really going to affect you in the long term, right? It'll just go back. But you can have serious physical complications from things like fillers, Botox, and obviously cosmetic surgery comes with its own set of risks.
Yeah, I think what you said about the reliance is such an important part. And I think when I was trying to draw the distinctions in my head, that was kind of the conclusion that I came to. Because I think, if you want to have something and it makes you feel better, then fantastic. But I think it's also really important to consider, okay, what if tomorrow you cannot access it? Like, what impact is that going to have? And if it's kind of just like, oh, that was a nice thing. Whereas if you had that reliance and then all of a sudden every lip filler company in your local area closes, how would you then be able to cope? I think that's a really good way of looking at it as to whether it's a form of self-care that you're doing. But I think it's more thinking about what happens if you can't do that. Because I know for me, like using the exercise example, it's fine to go to the gym every day. It's not fine, but in my head, it's fine. But it's when I can't go to the gym every day, that's when the issue arises. So I think that's a really good way of looking at it in terms of what's your reliance on that and what would happen if that was taken away.
Before I ever even found out about the world of minimally invasive procedures, I would say I was actually quite reliant on makeup, which again is something that a lot of people with body image issues, and especially body dysmorphia, especially centered around skin, that's what they kind of rely on. And for probably the most of my life, when I had a day job before I started my own company, I wouldn't really leave the house without like a properly done, not excessive, but just like a proper full face of makeup, right? Nice contouring and everything, very natural looking. But I would not go to work without it. I would not go to university without it. It was like, no, I'm going out. I can't go out without, my little shield. Like I can't let that standard slip that kind of people have come to expect when they see me. And I felt that there was no way. Like it didn't matter how long it took or how inconvenient it was, or if I had to get up really, really early to have sufficient amount of time to get ready. I think like sort of looking at it as big difference because of the level of invasiveness and stuff. For me, makeup now is more like make it or leave it, So it's like every once in a while I will actually put on makeup and I'll look, this looks really good. Or sometimes, a lot of people actually cosmetic procedures or the minimally invasive aesthetic procedures as a way to express themselves or make their appearance match how they're trying to present themselves. And again, it's not necessarily a bad thing wanting to change up your look. But again, when it becomes a preoccupation, when you cannot go without it, where it feels urgent, I think that's one of the, I suppose, signs. I hate the whole idea that aesthetic practitioners should be able to spot BDD. Like, it's a psychological issue. You can't spot it. But sort of one of the things that I suppose in some cases you can spot is the sense of urgency that people feel about getting procedures done. So if it's an impulsive decision that you need, like, now, you need it today, not tomorrow, not in a week's time, again, that's something to consider, you know, like, why can I not just live without it for a period of time?
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think that you've really nicely said that, like, you can't see body dysmorphia, because ultimately it's a psychological condition. So what you have got to do is kind of listen to what somebody's saying and evaluate what they're saying, their motivations, that level of urgency. Because if they're struggling with body dysmorphia, you're not going to be able to see what they're struggling with. I suppose it's tricky because if, let's say, a woman came to a cosmetic surgeon and said, my boobs are enormous, I have really serious back pain, like, I have got to have a breast reduction because it's really impacting my life. If they, like, objectively had very large boobs, I feel like that would kind of be the clinician would be like, yeah, okay, like, I can see that, therefore. But then if, let's say, you come in with a B cup and say, you know, I'm really struggling with my boobs and I want to have a breast reduction, blah blah blah, is that not a subjective decision from the surgeon to make in terms of whether they think, because they're both kind of saying the same thing, it's just that one physically does have large breasts whereas the other doesn't?
Exactly, it's such an interesting argument, and again, like, I could talk for hours just about this specific aspect of it. That's what it is. Like, motivations for cosmetic procedures are entirely, or they should be, driven internally, right? It's all subjective, as it should be. And so, where do I even start? There's no easy answer to this. That's why I think it should never be the aesthetic practitioner's call whether they will do something or not, because it's not their decision to make, if that makes sense. It's the patient's decision, because the patient know how much distress it causes them and how much they actually want this done. So for example, I find that hair loss is quite a good thing to demonstrate it, right? There's so many men out there with bald heads and it's a look, right? And they really like it and they would never ever think to do anything about it. And then you've got some men who are heavily preoccupied and highly affected by their hair loss. So again, who's to say that you can't live a perfectly normal life without hair? Just as, you know, you could make the argument that medically nobody needs straighter nose or bigger boobs or fuller lips or fewer wrinkles or whatever. It's all about how the person feels. I think the example that you brought up about anything that actually causes physical discomfort, right? So I think breast reduction is, in this context, quite a good example, because obviously it can cause physical discomfort, it can cause back pain. So you would almost look at that as a medical issue rather than a cosmetic one. So obviously that's a, if you were to make that distinction, right, like you're actually treating something that physically affects the person's quality of life, but you would generally say that, for example, not having a perfectly straight nose isn't going to affect your life, right? That is the psychological impact, right? Which is valid. But that's really what separates cosmetic procedures from medical procedures. What are we actually treating? If it's a medical procedure, then what is the medical issue that we're addressing by this procedure? And you could make an argument that it could be self-confidence, it could be self-esteem that you are actually trying to treat with an aesthetic treatment. But then where is the process in assessing this issue? Unless you explore that in depth, how can you tell that this patient will in fact benefit from this? And so again, then it goes down to, as I said, the issue with BDD is distorted perception, right? If you don't have an accurate idea of what your body looks like, you can't benefit from any physical changes because you just probably won't be able to see them. So again, unless the practitioner or surgeon makes sure that that's not the case, that this patient does in fact have an accurate perception of their body and they will be able to see the changes, it's worth giving a surgery a go, right? But again, it's just about assessing the patient's motivations and expectations and ideally ruling out or at least making them aware of the effect of things like BVD.
So if you're saying that it's not the clinician's responsibility to decide whether to do or to not to do a surgery, what is the responsibility of a clinician? I'm just thinking about, you know, if a clinician's listening and thinking, okay, I'm very aware that I could potentially have people that are coming through that really want to change their body and it's maybe not for the right intention. How can they make sure that it's not related to body dysmorphia, but then also support those clients?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is the question that has made me develop Prepare. And that's something I've been working on for over a year with many different collaborators, including aesthetics practitioners and mental health professionals and other patients who have had experiences similar to mine. So, and just the caveat, I did say that it shouldn't be the practitioner's decision whether they decide to go ahead or not to go ahead with the procedure. Just the caveat that there will be cases where it is absolutely the practitioner's responsibility to say, you know, let's not do this. But anyway, again, this is a very complex topic. But in terms of what practitioners should do, I think because psychological assessment is outside of their duty or outside the scope of their abilities, you know, it's something that psychologists and like therapists and counselors perhaps are able to do, but it's not something that should necessarily be expected of injectors. What they should do is ensure the patients have all the information that they could possibly need. And by that, I don't mean a several pages long consent form. I mean digestible information about how things like BDD can affect their satisfaction with procedures. So just a bit of education. And I think the way I see the role of aesthetics practitioners is, again, I believe their role shouldn't be to assess. Their role should be to make sure patients are asked the right questions. So again, and educate them. So just to give you an idea how it actually works. So it's kind of like an interactive, almost chatbot style questionnaire where patients are asked certain questions about their previous experience with procedures, about their motivations, about their expectations, things like would they want the procedure if nobody else noticed the change, to sort of gauge whether they are motivated internally or whether they're trying to please someone else, which again, that's one of the obvious unhealthy motivations. And then things like, you know, have you considered the financial impact of this? Have you considered the overall impact, like is your quality of life, you know, okay overall, or are you seeing this as a way to improve your life, which may not be realistic? So again, it's just like asking the patient the right set of questions and giving them context for what their answers could imply. So, and the really important thing here is, again, it's not a medical questionnaire. It's not meant to be stigmatizing or clinical or detached, or it shouldn't make the patient feel like they're being tested or assessed. It is literally just to make them pause, think, not react to show someone that they're ready, but to actually, you know, do this before the consultation, make sure they've had time to think about it, make sure there's no pressure to have a face-to-face confrontational type chat in their own time, in their own environment, think. And I think that's the opportunity that practitioners owe to their patients as a part of the pre-treatment consultation process. You know, the forms like the body dysmorphic disorder questionnaire and all the versions derived from it, they are not intended for a random person, for a random aesthetic doctor to use that to assess someone's readiness for a procedure. You know, that's why they just don't work. Anything that relies on the patient's honest input doesn't work, because in aesthetic settings, patients have absolutely no motivation to provide honest input.
I think that's a really good point that you've just said. You might feel kind of Like you don't want to own up, your biggest insecurity and everything. So actually giving somebody space to take that away, to digest it, to reflect on it. And I also think, being able to have those questions and reflect on them, you can really dig deeper into yourself and think, why am I wanting to do this, rather than just going ahead quite impulsively potentially, and then that having damaging effects. So I think, yeah, the fact that you've created this tool, it's something that's there for somebody. It's supportive. It's going to help them make the right decision. It's not kind of sitting there and being like, oh, you're really insecure and now you're making this big decision because you're weak and what have you like that. It's actually, we really want to help you make the right decision here. And this is invasive, so it could potentially be damaging. So it's definitely something that, you need to really have a think about.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on and on about the features and the science and the intention behind the development of this tool, but I guess key point is, unlike literally every other tool, not that there are actually many fit for purpose, but this has been developed together with patients, which I think is absolutely crucial.
Absolutely. And where can practitioners go if they're thinking, okay, yeah, I absolutely need to be looking at this so that I can help my clients make the most informed decisions?
Yeah, so there is a lot of resources available at Prepare's website. You can find Prepare on Instagram, you can find us on TikTok, you can email info@prepare.com. And on Prepare's website, there is also Patient Hub. So that's basically a free resource for practitioners to refer any of their patients to, whether they have the subscription or not. It's a completely open information hub to help patients on their cosmetic journey and provide different websites and helplines and books, podcast recommendations, including this one. And again, it's just to make practitioners' life a little easier so that they have somewhere to send their patients. So yeah, definitely do check that out.
Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I think it's so nice because I think it is a bit of a tricky conversation, and I think it's such a personal thing as well. So have that insight, and for also support for practitioners is fantastic. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate everything you do and the awareness you're raising around really important issues. So thank you. It's been a pleasure.